Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast.
You get the idea? Bring me
a dream. It's on the internet. Make him the cutest
that I've ever seen. Go on. Give him two
lips. Like it's like no cheese I've ever tasted. And tell him
that his loss. Here's the Sandman. Over
Sandman. Most of our kids went back to school recently, and our education system does very little when it comes to teaching our kids about money. That's why it's incredibly important that as a parent or grandparent, we do everything we can to share our hard-earned knowledge with our kids. If you haven't found the right opportunity or you just don't know how to start the conversation, well, you're in luck because today you can go back to school and learn something, since I'm going to cover six things you need to teach your kids about when it comes to money. This is going to be a great show, so stick around. Good morning. I am David Hollander, the Sandman, and this is Protect Your Assets Radio. For those of you just joining us for the first time, welcome. People around here, they call me the Sandman, and that's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering their most troubled legal and financial questions each week right here on KNBR. That's because I've run a financial firm for almost 30 years, and I am a practicing attorney. So teaching our kids about earning and saving money is an important life skill that can pay huge dividends in the future. Many successful entrepreneurs that I know started their careers doing odd jobs when they were kids to earn extra money. The skills they learned as kids running, starting up businesses, helped them advance into careers that in some cases did extremely well. And in addition, they really enjoyed their work and contributed to society. So we can't turn back time, but it's never too late to teach your kids how to save, invest, and start a business. So don't miss a single second of today's show as I share six things you need to teach your kids about money. Now, let's get started. Well, this was a tough third week in a row on Wall Street. Markets finished down as China, Russia, COVID fears, and Fed policy all weighed in. The Dow was down 3%. It's now down almost 14% for the year. The S&P 500, talked about this last week, closed at 3924. Remember what I was saying last week? You got to miss listen to this market segment. Anyway, 39.24 down 3.3% for the week. Year to date, we're off almost 18%, getting very close to that correction territory again, which you know is down 20% or more. And that would be that 3,900 mark I was talking about last week. So if you missed the podcast last week, go check it out. NASDAQ down 4.2%. Off almost 26% for the year, and the international index, the EFI, off almost 5% for the week, down 4.9% year to date. Again, correction territory, down 23.4%. So you have the NASDAQ and the EFI both in correction territory. 10-year treasury, well, bright spot there, closed the week at 3.2%. Yield now is 1.7 for the year, up again, not bad. And the oil, $87 a barrel. Bonds down again, off 11% year to date, off for the week 1.2%. So very few places to hide overall when it comes to the market. And so let's look at what happened this week that dragged down the market. Well, it really started on Wednesday, if you think about it. The stocks had a heavy tone coming in as reports are coming out of China that there's more lockdowns in the city of Chengdu, and it's more than 21 million residents were going to be locked up for several days of testing after COVID again spiked in that region. And then we had a massive blow to Europe. Actually, this just happened. Russia's Gazprom, G-A-Z-P-R-O-M, Gazprom, I guess, they said that their key gas pipeline to Europe can't reopen, and it's today, Saturday, as a new technical issue has developed. And so you add to that the Fed with the Fed talking about the pain, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, the market just didn't like it. And the European market also is figuring that next week the ECB is going to raise 75 basis points. And that's kind of what got that going. Unemployment number was relatively positive. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the key here, which I was saying last week, was the unemployment. And so in a good area, what we had happen there was we did have a decent drop in the unemployment rate down to 3.7%. And so that was down, which could have been a lot worse. If it had been worse, this market would have gotten even worse. So S&P fell into the technical support area of 3,900 that I was talking about. And I think it's too early right now to call a bottom to this bidless decline in stocks. But there is evidence that a bottom could form at the 3,900 level in the sessions ahead. And as we said last week, it's going to really depend on what we see coming from the Fed, because obviously the Fed is driving this market. And as we set in higher highs and higher lows, this is a very basic, what we call historic strong technical development, in that we're building a base right now at this level. So let's look at the unemployment number. And I'm going to say it was just right overall. You could have it too hot, too cool, or just right, like Goldilocks. This was just right. Because, like I was just saying, hiring slowed in August, but it remained sturdy as employers added 315,000 jobs. The estimate was 300,000. The softer consumer spending gains, rising interest rates, and a sputtering economy as things start to slow down. The important thing, again, was the unemployment rate. It went up, meaning there's more people unemployed. Went from 3.5 to 3.7. You know, we'll take it. 2.2 tenths of a gain. It's okay. This was according to the U.S. Labor Department. And that's because the labor force, the number of people working and looking for jobs, shot up by nearly 800,000, with many of those on the sidelines going back into the labor market. So this is good news, as it makes it less likely that the Fed will get more hawkish and raise rates too much. And there's a good chance with this number that they start to cut rates. Again, we're not looking till the second half of 2023 for that to happen, but it could happen, and that's good news. Now let's turn to the bond market, because the bond market tends to predict the future as well. So turning to treasuries right now, and the 10-2 spread, remember that? That's the 10-year treasury, which closed the week off at 3.19%. The 2-year, which is paying more interest, closed at 3.39. So that's called an inversion. When you have the 2-year paying more than the 10-year, the market's signaling that we're going to have some problem in equity. So that's called an inversion. And the overall gain in that area, I think, is positive. And here's why. Because the bond market's saying right now that the economic slowdown, which you could say is looming, it's not going to be as bad as feared a few weeks ago. That's what at least this inversion is saying. Growth right now remains solid, and this implies that any slowdown may not be as bad as feared. And so bottom line, when you compare those numbers, it's essentially a 20 basis point spread. It's not great. It's not a great inversion, because we never like inversions, but it's better than, say, 50 basis point spread, where it was a few weeks ago. And so if 10-2s can continue to rally and move towards the 0%, meaning there's no inversion or differential, sooner than later, that's a positive sign from the bond market, and it would be the first one that we've seen in a while. So we're generally moving in the right direction, and that's a good thing. Now, some more news to just think about would be the period that we see after midterm elections. Now, remember, midterm elections are going to be held on Tuesday, November 8th this year. And if you look at history, it seems to be on the side of markets in midterm years. In the 12 months prior to election date, market performance is typically not so great and can be volatile, just like we've seen this year. However, in the year after midterms, market returns are positive on average by about 15%, regardless of which party is in power. And markets in many cases tend to prefer a gridlock outcome, which is where we see a split between the House and the Senate, potentially, across parties. And this is likely, given what we're seeing at this moment in time. Now, remember, this past performance, no guarantee of future results, but again, just some things to think about. And so the other thing I'd like to talk about this morning is what just happened last week, because this is also important when you look at history. And this is, I'm going to call it a history of Fed warnings. Now, one of the phrases that the financial media this past week has been keying in on from Powell's speech, Chairman Powell of the Fed, his speech last week, was his declaration that we're likely to experience some pain, quote, in the economy as the Fed continues to raise rates to try and bring down inflation. Now, Powell became the third Fed chairman in my career to explicitly warn of tougher times ahead for the economy or markets. Fed chairs explicitly warning of future pain is not a regular occurrence. And that's because they're usually cautiously optimistic or not committed on the path of the market or growth. Very seldom do you get a Fed chairman make a warning on growth or valuations. So as a result, I wanted to look back at the two previous warnings I witnessed, review the market performance following each, and see if there are any conclusions we can draw. So warning one, Greenspan, remember Alan Greenspan, January 20th, 1999, he was testifying in front of the House Ways and Means Committee when after nearly 80% gains in the NASDAQ over the prior 2 years, this is what Greenspan said. He said that the rally in stocks was unusual as it wasn't being driven by rising earnings. And he said that the rally will likely have difficulty in being sustained, the famous irrational exuberance speech, you may remember. What happened to markets after that warning? Well, they rallied at first. The S&P rose through 1999, and 1 year from the warnings, January 20th, 2000, the S&P 500 had produced a 15% gain. But Greenspan's warning proved accurate, and in early 2000, stocks rolled over hard as the tech bubble burst. By the time the bottom was reached, October 9th, 2002, the S&P 500 had fallen 38% from when Greenspan made the warning. Warning number two, Ben Bernanke acknowledges the risk in subprime. Then Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, testifying before Congress, addressed the growing housing crisis. Mr. Bernanke acknowledged there would be some pain in the housing market, but also said he thought the risk from the housing market could be mostly contained in the subprime area. Well, what happened after the warning? Well, markets rallied initially. The S&P 500 rallied more than 10% over the next several months, but the gains didn't last. And March 2009, the S&P 500 had dropped more than 40%. So, what does this mean for markets now? Well, to me, there are two takeaways. First, if a Fed chair warns about something, you better listen. Powell warned of some economic pain ahead, so we should all prepare for that pain. Second, be suspect of any relief rallies following these warnings. In both warning instances, stocks rallied for months before the economic realities both Fed chairs warned of came to fruition. That doesn't mean we should automatically fade every rally going forward, but we should remain skeptical of those rallies until the factors that are behind the warnings, higher rates, higher inflation, slower growth, start to ease. And remember, past performance isn't indicative of future results, and in both instances, the warnings were given closer to the highs than we are now. But the bottom line is Powell warned of pain, and we should listen. Tired of Venmoing your daughter money each week? Well, stick around as I share with you how to discuss money and priorities when I come back. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Show with David Hollander. That's me, the Sandman. We'll be right back.
Times are changing. Some would say they've already changed. And how do you actually protect your assets? David Hollander's Protect Your Assets events focus on common financial concerns that individuals and families face in retirement. Things like how to prepare for unexpected medical expenses and ways to create income to help support your desired lifestyle. Join us at our next free event to learn how addressing these concerns can help you feel more confident about the days ahead and help you sleep better at night. Just go to pyaevents.com and reserve your seat today. That's pyaevents.com and sign up or join the wait list today. pyaevents.com. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman, and you're listening to Protect Your Assets. And you don't need to go it alone when it comes to the market. I know it's been tough. It's been a hard week, hard 3 weeks in a row. And if you want to know what's coming or what you should be doing, if you missed our market segment, let's face it, our kids get just about zero education when it comes to money and investing in school. Now, I'm bringing this up right now because I know most of our kids have started to go back to school and curriculums are there and they're doing what they're doing. But they talk about money. They just don't. They never really do. So only a few schools that my kids went through ever brought up the subject. And I know you're busy and you're happy. Probably your kids are back in school. I get it. But how and when you talk to your kids about money, well, it's important. And now is as good a time as ever to start the conversation, particularly because we have a long weekend this weekend. So let's say you're making dinner, you're driving them to practice, or you're sitting at the table together. Ask them if they understand why you go to work. Explain that you go to work to earn money so you can pay for the food they're eating or the car you're driving around in, and then ask them what kind of work would they like to do. Ask them how they will get paid for their work. We'll talk about jobs a little later, but getting them to understand that work produces income is important, and that income is used to support yourself is the point you're trying to drive home. Now, once they understand that they will be making money, you need to teach them to count and record their earnings. Now, I know a lot of us are not great at that, so the easiest way to do that is to open a bank account with your child. Now, this can be done online, but you need to make sure they have an account in their name. If they are under 18, you can be the guardian on the account, but make sure it's in their name and they can open the app on their smartphone and see it for themselves. I remember back in the day, my mom and I, we went down to the bank and we opened up an account in my name, and I would put my little paycheck that came from my paper route every month, or the dollars I would save from walking the dogs, and I would give it to the teller, and she or he would write that number on my little passbook. Remember those little passbooks? And I always wondered, you know, what's preventing you from adding a little more in there, or them taking a little off, or what if you lost it? I was worried about that. But that's not the way it's done today, because I think the banks, for one, don't want to spend the money on the person sitting there in the bank to talk to you. Two, they don't want to produce those passbooks anymore because obviously it costs them some money. But the principle is the same. You must open an account with your child, make them participate in the process, and then either put their weekly allowance or make them put their paycheck in there each and every time that they get that, rather than going to one of those check cashing places. Now, this will get them comfortable with the idea of saving and then using a debit card to make purchases that they can afford. And you notice how I said that they can afford, because that's all they have in their account. And that's what's great about a debit card. Debit cards will never allow them to spend more than what's actually in the account. And that really helps develop those habits of not buying things on impulse and spending more than you really have. Now, Discover Bank has a checking account that actually pays some decent interest. Once the account is open, you can go over with them the deposit how the money actually went in there, why taxes were taken out of their paycheck, and with the remaining amount, how much they are actually saving. Now, make sure you go over with them the deductions from their paycheck and what they mean. It's important that they start doing the math and see how money goes in and comes out before you buy what you want. This helps them appreciate how much things actually cost and cuts down on the impulse to just buy something, which is so easy today electronically by just clicking on something. Next, discuss with your child about what their money goal is. For me, I wanted to buy an 8-wheeler skateboard when I was a kid. I remember saving and saving and saving all of my different jobs that I had at the time until I had enough money to go down to the skate shop and buy that board. Now, what was fascinating about that, as soon as I rode that board on the sidewalk, I hated it. It was really hard to ride. But I sure enjoyed the experience of saving and then buying it. And as I first rode it, I remember I felt so prideful and accomplished that I had actually done it and that was mine. But it never really became a great skateboard and I didn't really like it. So, you know, that's your chance to, as your child is telling you what they're interested in, that you go over with them, you know, is that a good decision or why are you thinking about that? And did you get to try it out, or have you tried it on or worn it, or, you know, all those sort of things, as opposed to just buying it online, where nowadays it's so easy to do that and maybe you just never going to really like it. So think about that too, because your child, you know, again, sees something, they think it's great, but it may not be. And so this is your chance to talk with them about saving, setting goals, counting the deposits and hours that they're going to need to put in to get to your goal. And this will also help you help them set realistic objectives. Now, be careful here. Russell Wilson told me that his dad used to tell him, "Why not you?" In other words, let your kids dream and don't necessarily let your experiences shade their vision. The beautiful thing about dreaming is anything is possible. And why not your son or daughter when you think about it? How much money would you have if you started investing in your teens? You can't turn back time, but you can turn your teen into an investor. How? Well, another great idea is to get a copy of my book, Protect Your Assets, as a way to help you help your kids get started. What I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to give you a copy of my book electronically. If you call us right now and set up a time to talk, call this number, 866-PROTECT, the number to call, 866-PROTECT. Why not your son or daughter call 866-PROTECT right now to get your free copy of my book, Protect Your Assets Digitally. Coming up next, it's time for our popular They Say segment, where they say you should let your child invest in a business. Is this always a good idea? You're listening to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander. That's me. We'll be right back.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show, Protect Your Assets, hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, "Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast." Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice. Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman, and you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And I know the financial and investing world can be complex, intimidating, so much so that people become frozen, or they end up making mistakes, or just missing out. What if you could turn back time and learn the basics about investing when you were young? Imagine the difference that might have made in your life. Well, that's why today, since kids are going back to school and our education system, frankly, is not doing too much to educate them about it, I'm sharing with you 6 things you need to teach your kids about money and investing while you both have time to do it. Now it's time for one of our fan favorite parts of the show, our They Say segment, where we debunk common myths, half-truths, and just sometimes bad advice that they say.
Who are they? What do they know that I don't? And what are they saying this week? Here's David Hollander, the Sandman's answer.
So here's one they say. They say that you should always let your kids invest in a business. Is this always a good idea? Well, this is really important because whether your kids want to start a business or have been approached by someone to invest, this is your opportunity to teach them about your values when it comes to business and what they practice and how they affect society. I'm all for your kids starting a car washing or dog walking business in your neighborhood, but make sure your kids know to run any business option by you first. I think of an example where someone tried to get my daughter to invest in a business that was designed to take advantage of people. The business was recruiting college kids to do the cold calling for them to try to get people to fill out a credit card application. The company charged super high interest rates and was trying to take advantage of people who had poor or no credit. With proper vetting, investing in a business can be exciting. Whether they decide to open their own business or have researched businesses owned by family members or friends, investing in a business makes everything personal, and it's an excellent way for your teen to want to learn about businesses and investing. While I believe failure is a great way to learn, you want to make sure your teen isn't setting themselves up for failure by investing in a business that just isn't viable. That's why the skills we worked on in the previous segment are important. Make sure that your kids understand dollars earned, taxes, and expenses that come out, and when what ends up in their pocket or bank account after the work is done. I know in Silicon Valley, many companies don't make any money for a very long time, but if the idea is sound, eventually they should, and that's why lots of money pours into them. And the point is to teach them sound business practices. The cost of investing in individual businesses can be high for some teenagers, so you as the parent need to be willing to act as the voice of reason when necessary, but try to hold yourself back if you don't understand what they are talking about or the area that they are interested in. I'll give you an example. I've seen young people start very successful companies from very simple ideas. As most of you know, I like cars. In fact, I like to race cars. And I think of Nick Woodman. He's the CEO of GoPro. You may know Nick. Nick and I used to race at the Jim Russell School in Sonoma in the early 2000s. Nick didn't want to pay the $100 it cost to put a camera on your car, so he created his own camera and then got friends and family to loan him $200,000. And now all of them have made a lot of money off that initial investment, so is Mr. Woodman. Sometimes it's those simple ideas that we can't see that change the world and your child's life. So get involved, but not too involved, and let them explore opportunities as they present themselves. I know it can be difficult, but making sure your teenager is investing responsibly is essential and will allow you to help protect them before they make a big mistake. The next thing I'd like you to do is establish a Roth IRA for your child. The benefits, think taxes. There's a good possibility that taxes are going to be going up in the future. In fact, we know in 2025, the current tax rules are going to sunset by operation of law. And it's likely here at the midterm elections that nothing really will get done and we'll be stuck for a few years. In a Roth IRA, the contributions that go in have already been taxed. And rather than stashing more and more cash away at the bank, earning very little interest, have them work on funding and maxing out a Roth IRA each year. The limit here for 2022 is $6,000, and all earnings and money in the Roth IRA is tax-free for the remainder of your child's life. Of course, this bars any IRS changes, but at the moment, that's the way that is. Finally, the funds can't be accessed until retirement age, which forces you to leave the money in there. For you, you may already have a Roth IRA, and if not, you may want to speak to a financial advisor about the opportunity to develop a Roth conversion strategy to convert your IRA or 401k into Roth IRA money. Remember, it's more of a tax decision than it is an investment decision, because a Roth conversion is a taxable event and may have several tax-related consequences. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decision regarding your IRA distribution. The next step has to do with what you teach your kids to invest in the Roth. Teach them to buy index funds. Mutual funds were born during the last century and have grown extremely popular. There were nearly 8,000 mutual funds in 2020 and billions of dollars allocated to these products. However, I want you to consider advising your kids to avoid the actively managed mutual funds and instead use index funds, or as we call them, ETFs, exchange traded funds, and here's why. With less experience typically comes lesser knowledge, mainly due to lack of exposure to this type of thing. So picking and managing actively managed mutual funds is tough. It's well documented that index funds and ETFs are less expensive than their actively managed mutual fund counterparts. It's also well documented that these actively managed mutual funds typically underperform their benchmark indexes consistently over time, which is what your kids have plenty of. In addition, if your child wants to invest in one stock, it is likely less risky to buy an ETF that could have hundreds or if not thousands of positions in it. So explain that to them. An index is a basket of stocks that mirrors or follows a benchmark index like the S&P 500, and the fund itself will have the exact same stocks or positions inside it that the index does. And when changes are made to that index, changes are made to their fund. So rather than having to choose which stock to buy and how much, you can create a convenient way to get exposure to markets and to indexes that may make a lot of sense. Last, teach your kids to contribute or save regularly or systematically. This is really important. The point here is that you should teach them to save their money. Periodic or regular contributions into a 401k or a Roth is one of the easiest lessons you can teach them. It's easy to set up, and the systematic and continual nature of it over time will force them to look at how they spend their money more closely, and most importantly, how they save it and how it grows. If you want to help your kids get started on learning the topics I'm discussing today, then you can do yourself a favor right now. Pick up the phone, and because it is a special weekend, I'm going to go ahead and give you a copy of my book, Protect Your Assets. Now, this is an electronic version, but you need to call us to get it. So call this number, 866-PROTECT. Again, 866-PROTECT to get a copy of my book right now for free if you give us a call. Why wait? Help your kids get financially prepared to deal with life today. It's easy, it's painless, it's complimentary, and we can help you. So call this number, 866-776-8328. Talk to a member of my team and get yourself that book. It's time for a quick break, but when we come back, find out how to teach your kids to turn $100 into $1 million or more. It always pays you to keep it tuned right here to protect your assets. We'll be right back.
Times are changing. Some would say they've already changed. And how do you actually protect your assets? David Hollander's Protect Your Assets events focus on common financial concerns that individuals and families face in retirement. Things like how to prepare for unexpected medical expenses and ways to create income to help support your desired lifestyle. Join us at our next free event to learn how addressing these concerns can help you feel more confident about the days ahead and help you sleep better at night. Just go to pyaevents.com and reserve your seat today. That's pyaevents.com and sign up or join the wait list today. pyaevents.com. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman, and you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And that reminds me, so every parent understands the importance of raising money-savvy kids and teaching them how to earn money is an important step in that process. Many successful entrepreneurs started their careers doing odd jobs as kids to earn money. This work early on builds important life skills that can be carried forward into their future so that your kids can take care of themselves. Unfortunately, these days, the education system doesn't do anything to help our kids. And also, the days of plentiful jobs for teenagers have dwindled significantly, according to a report by the Pew Research Center. Summer employment for teens was as high as 58% in 1970, but now it sits around 35%. So don't let that stop you or your kids. There's still tons of opportunities for kids to earn money right now and start to build some serious savings. Well, like what? Well, have them start an online job. Today, kids are more connected than ever, and that opens up a world of possibilities for making money online even while they're in school. First idea, they could start a YouTube channel. The barrier to entry with online jobs has never been lower. Modern phones come equipped with cameras good enough to shoot good-looking YouTube or TikTok videos. Try searching YouTube for something you already are interested in. If there are videos getting a lot of views in that space, then there is probably room for you to join as well with your opinion or your style or flair or whatever you're into. Depending on how popular this becomes, they can actually get paid by advertisers once they get a certain amount of views. Next, you could sell creative services on Upwork or Fiverr. Do you like graphic design, photo editing, video production? Kind of goes on and on. Try offering these services as a freelancer on sites like Upwork or Fiverr with two R's. While they may not pay a ton, they can get a great tool to hone your skills and lead to higher paying jobs down the road. You could also try selling crafts on Etsy if your kids like to make things. If you're interested in crafting or creating printables like meal planners, budget templates, or other decorations, Etsy may be a great way to earn some extra income and market what your child is really good at making. You could also flip items on eBay or Amazon using what's called retail arbitrage. This one got my attention recently. Retail arbitrage is the practice of buying discounted items from brick and mortar stores, garage sales, or flea markets, and then reselling those items for a much higher price on eBay or Amazon. While finding profitable items has gotten a little bit more difficult as stores have started to catch on and competition has increased, there is still plenty of room in the market, and some of our clients are pulling down $50,000 plus a year in doing this sort of sideline business once they retire. So it doesn't mean your kids couldn't do it as well. Next, your kids could start a blog. Find a niche that your kids are passionate about and start writing about it. There are online communities for almost every niche imaginable, so find yours and get to work. This idea probably won't make you money right now, but give it a year or two and the income potential could be rather large. Offer social media or SEO services to local companies. This one's actually very good for kids. Reach out to local businesses you frequent or have connections with. Offer to write them 10 social media posts or a few blog posts they can post on their website. If you can impress them with your work, this can turn into an ongoing job that only requires a few hours per week and pays very high hourly wages. Well, that's it for now, but remember, you can do this and help your kids. You just have to start the conversation and above all, listen to them and be patient. Remember, patient, patience. Now, here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to breathe in through your nose, exhale through your mouth. That's it. Now, picture a day when your kids are completely self-sufficient. Picture a day when you're standing in your driveway and your son drives up in your dream car and says, "Here, Mom or Dad, it's yours." Picture a day when you can relax, travel, and finally do all the things you've been dreaming about. Well, it all starts with you. You need to pick up the phone and have a 15-minute virtual checkup. Right now, we're working here on a Saturday to help you. If you have questions and they're not getting answered, or you have that feeling, you know the one, well, remove that gray area and take action now. Get your own 15-minute complimentary virtual checkup with a fiduciary by picking up your phone and dialing this number, 1-866-PROTECT, 866-776-8328. Talk to me or a member of my team right now by dialing 866-PROTECT and request your own personal meeting and second opinion, 866-PROTECT. I'd like to give a big thanks to the Protect Your Assets team for putting together another great show today. My executive producer and network manager, Kevin Renfer. And of course, all my fabulous producers there answering the phone, Phil, Adrian, and Cam. Because without my team, I'm just another pretty voice on the radio. Thanks again, everybody. You've been listening to the Protect Your Assets show on the Protect Your Assets Radio Network. I'm David Hollander, the Sandman. Have a great weekend. Go out and make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.